The ordinary miracle of spring has arrived. We know it came officially yesterday morning at 10:30 with the March equinox, or vernal equinox as we know it here in the northern hemisphere. The days and nights are very close to the same length as the sun shines directly on the equator. We see the results of the ordinary miracle of spring all around us. Springtime birds, migrating ducks and geese heading north, daffodils and tulips and cherry blossoms galore. I yearn to have some moments in the sun with my garden. I planted some sweet peas last week. We'll see if the soil is really warm enough for them to sprout. My father, a farmer, always thought of springtime as the new year. He saw it as a time of rebirth and hope, a time to plant new crops, a time for new and hopefully better things. He's not the only one to consider spring as the beginning of the year. The children will be studying the ancient Persian New Year of Nowruz today. According to ancient Persian mythology, Jamshid, the mythological king of Persia, ascended to the throne on this day, and each year it is commemorated with festivities. They recall the story of creation and the ancient cosmology of Iranian and Persian people. The March equinox is a holiday for a number of nations, including Afghanistan and India. Zoroastrians and Muslim Ismailis also consider the March equinox as their new year. How do you explain the new year when you don't have the science? The myth of the Greek goddesses Demeter and Persephone are one way that it is explained, especially the rebirth of plants. There are several versions, of course, of this myth. Generally speaking, though, Demeter and Persephone rule over the growth and death of vegetation on the earth. It seems that the god Hades, though, took a shine to Demeter's daughter Persephone and took her to his domain in the underworld. But when he did that, Mother Demeter mourned. No longer did she care for the lush growth everyone was accustomed to, and so plants died. There were no crops. Animals stopped reproducing. People became afraid for their livelihood. Daddy God Zeus pleaded for Demeter to go back to her goddess duties, making everything fruitful. In the end, a compromise is reached. Persephone was to spend 2/3 of the year with Hades as his wife and 1/3 of the year with Demeter, goddess of the harvest, her mother. The earth would respond to her presence or her absence. Spring is a time of rebirth, of renewal, in a most literal sense. We can see it and smell it, even taste it. Some of us feel it most keenly when we overreact to the pollen. But now I want to consider another kind of rebirth, a psychological kind. For the past several years, I've been studying Bowen family systems theory. It's all about how a person relates to others. When what you learn about getting along with the members of your family shows you, teaches you how to get along with the rest of the world. The family is the first place you learn about relationships and how to do them. As you might imagine, some of us have better relationship skills than others. Maybe our family was better at it, or maybe we learned improved techniques once we got older. But it is our family's interactions that we learned early on that tell us what is normal, what is right. They form our expectations about how the world works. Families create the template that we use for our values and thoughts. Sometimes we do learn different things, but when we get tired or stressed out, we can revert to those earlier, perhaps less effective, ways of relating. Bowen posits that each person balances two forces, togetherness and individuality. Too much togetherness and you get fusion, like the ducks that always have to go together. It's tough to be your own self when you're fused. Too much individuality makes for a distant and estranged family. Differentiation is the ability to have your own feelings, your own thoughts, and not merely agree with everyone around you. Undifferentiated people have difficulty thinking logically and basing their responses on those logical thoughts. They look to family to define how they think about issues, feel about people, and interpret their experiences. Differentiation is the process of freeing yourself from your family's processes so that you can define yourself. This means being able to have opinions and values different from your family. But here's the kicker: being able to stay emotionally connected to them. It means being able to calmly reflect on a conflicted interaction afterward, figuring out, now let's see, what part did I play in that, and then choosing a different response in the future. A poorly differentiated person might depend heavily on the acceptance and the approval of other people, and they quickly adjust to what they say, what they think, a chameleon. Or they might dogmatically proclaim to others that this is the way it should be and you should agree with me. The bullies depend just as much on approval and acceptance as the chameleons, but bullies push others to agree with them rather than agreeing with others. An extreme rebel is a poorly differentiated person too, but he pretends to be a self by routinely opposing the positions of others. It's all a continuum, of course. Few of us are at either end of the scale. Most of us slip and slide along in the middle somewhere. The challenge is be as mature as possible under the circumstances. Put me into a stressful situation that looks like one I had trouble with as a child, and I might well act like I did as a child. Most of the time, most of us function pretty well, maintaining civil and thoughtful relationships even when we disagree. Every time we take a small step in the direction of healthier relationships, I consider it a kind of rebirth. Every time we are able to be just a little more of our own true self, Bowen calls it solid self, instead of either the need to agree or disagree because of that other person's opinion, is a rebirth. And all of these little steps that we are able to take, like the proverbial butterfly flapping, influence the way others relate to you as well. The goal is to know yourself, as the saying goes, and act yourself. And stay in relationship with your family, your friends, your coworkers. You are finding that healthier balance between individuality and togetherness. Not fused and overlapping, and not cut off and distant either. All this balance. Gee, I think I spoke about balance in our lives last equinox. All this balance affects other systems we are part of. Your workplace, your circle of friends, your church. The better we know ourselves individually, the more whole our whole congregation will be, system speaking. When we change ourselves, we know darn well we can't change each other. We've tried it. When we change ourselves, the system changes, if only slightly. It's another ordinary miracle. Edwin Friedman tells the tale of a guy who got tossed off a ship in a storm. He was lucky enough to float into an island with abundant food and people who would take care of him. Language wasn't a problem. Gestures worked. But they're a bit different. It seems that once they are born, they are never cut the umbilical cord. They remain attached to all through their lives. They have figured out how to cut it from the mother when she wants to have a subsequent child, but they reattach it to some other woman. When someone wants to marry, the cord would be transferred then to the spouse. The storm-tossed passenger had trouble conveying to these people that he wanted to be alone sometimes. They had no understanding of that need. While to our modern sense, this way of bonding might seem primitive, even uncivilized, the effects of this constant attachment on society were astounding. Anger was unknown. Depression was easily cured. Crime was unheard of, and jealousy never spawned, and competition and rivalry were totally absent. There was no such thing as embarrassment, nor any of those behavior patterns that we have come to call neuroses. If there was fear or anxiety, it was experienced only during that period of time when someone accidentally lost a partner. Such loss would always be replaced as soon as possible, and the anxiety would subside. The expected death of a family member never increased anxiety greatly. Backup was right there. People felt freer to die, too. Well, the man spent many years on the island. At one point, he did try this style of relationship, but he found he could not tolerate the person he was connected to just all the time. But rather than teach them to bicker, he asked for a separation. At another point, he thought he had convinced a woman to live with him without the cord attachment. But her family's concern dissuaded her from carrying through with the wedding. Of course, the rescue ship, the proverbial rescue ship, does come. And the man decided to leave. The islanders took his impending departure with perfect equanimity. He wondered if they even cared about him. When he got home, his story sounded too fantastic to be true, and too true to be fantasy. Many years later, another ship happened upon the island, and some of the crew went ashore and found a bustling metropolis. Newspapers carried their current events, crime, economic issues, sports, and, of course, advertisements. One of the visiting crew remembered, "You know, as a child, I once heard a story about a beautiful island just like this. A man claimed to have lived there for several years. He described it as one of the loveliest places he had ever seen, with the kindest and warmest people. He could have been describing this place. Except he said it was very primitive. And there was another thing. Everyone went around constantly tied to someone else by their umbilical cords." "Oh, I remember him," said their tour guide. "That is the way it used to be right here. But after he left, we all cut them off."